Let's Talk PR and More.
Public relations, media, publicity, integrated communications, marketing, digital, reputation management, and more.
Let's Talk PR and More with award-winning PR strategist Sherry Goldman.
I'm Sherry Goldman, president of Goldman Communications Group, and welcome to Let's Talk PR and More. My guest today is Ken Makovsky. Ken is chairman and CEO of Makovsky, one of the leading global independent integrated communications firms. The firm works in the financial services and investor relations, health, corporate and technology, energy, and digital and innovation sectors. Ken is also founder and past president of IPREX, the second largest global corporation of independent public relations firms, and he was co-chair of the board for the Institute of Public Relations, the leading research organization in public relations in the U.S. Ken has been named top business-to-business counselor in the public relations industry, a PR All-Star, PR Professional of the Year, PR Executive of the Year, and PR Blogger of the Year. And he has received the Saber Individual Achievement Award and PRSA New York's John Hill Award for Outstanding Achievement. So I'm so honored that Ken is here with us today. Welcome, Ken.
Glad to be here, and thanks for inviting me. I'm really excited about this opportunity to express my point of view.
Great. Let's get started. I'm so glad you're here. First, I'd love for you just to tell everybody a bit about your background, how you got started in PR and founded Makovsky and a company, and a bit about the agency. It's so well respected and so well thought of. So tell us a little bit about that.
Well, thanks for your interest. Really, the seeds were planted during my years at Washington University in St. Louis. I ended up going to law school and received my Juris Doctor, but decided I really did not like law. And I did develop analytical and counselor skills, which have been very important in terms of my career in PR. And I ran for president of the student body of Washington U, which enabled me to realize that I was good at organizing events, event management. I wrote my own column in the student newspaper at Washington U and won first prize in column writing in a national competition sponsored by University of Missouri. I was president of my social fraternity, and when I got into office, I found out that the house was near bankruptcy and needed a complete turnaround, which I did, and that led me to want to be an entrepreneur. All of that I put together after 10 years in working in the agency business for a couple agencies and developed the specialization format that we have in being in technology, health, and finance. I founded IPREX, which you mentioned is a global organization of independent public relations firms that today is in 30 countries. And we're in about 25 cities in the United States. Does that sort of give you a summary?
It does. So fabulous. You are certainly a phenomenal success story and inspirational for talking about, I guess, when you went to college. A lot of students listen to the show, too, so they will understand that what they are doing now could lay the seeds for phenomenal career success going forward.
I really think that the skill sets that you get if you activate university activities are just, they're fantastic because of application in life.
Perfect. Now let's get to the crux of what we're here. And I know one of the things that I believe, and I know that you believe, and it's so important in our work in public relations, is the importance of trust. Trust is one of the key tenets of public relations. We need to get people to trust our clients. We need trusting the media that covers and writes about our clients. People need to trust the business. It's critical for business success and for society. And yet, we know that trust is eroding. And the recent Edelman Trust Barometer that just came out this week says that trust in NGOs, businesses, government, and the media is literally only 46%. down 2% from last year, but 46%, that is so crazy low. So let me start with, why do you think this is, Ken?
Well, let me just make a couple comments about trust. If you want to influence what people do and think, which is what our business is about, they have to trust you. And trust is the currency of relationships. 71% of people will not buy from a company they don't trust. And that is consistent with the statistic, Jerry, that you just gave before. So the question is why is trust declining? And I see several reasons. First and foremost is fake news. Publishing on the internet in particular, specifically dis or misinformation, and then it spreads throughout the world because of the internet. Today it can be done with a video, it can be done with audio, it can be done with print, it can be done with almost any kind of format. And in fact, just yesterday, there was it looked like an ad for Joe Biden urging people not to vote. Now, we know that that would not be what Joe Biden would do, but it was a picture of him with his lips moving and the audio stating the point about not voting. So fake news is one of the reasons. Another reason, I think, is there is no such thing as privacy anymore. Google, Amazon, and other companies have access to your information, and this situation diminishes trust as well. A third reason, I think, is the explosion of content on the internet. You don't know what to believe about what, because there's so many contrasting views. So does that answer your question?
Well, it does, and then it opens so many questions for me to ask you about. So as I hear what you're saying, and so much of that is somewhat generative in artificial intelligence, which when you were talking about the Joe Biden thing, as I understand it, I mean, they have replicated his voice and everything. AI is creating a real problem in terms of trust.
I think that's a very good point that you're making, largely because I feel that AI does not necessarily relate to what the reality is out there. And it can take a prompt and take it into another realm, but not the realm that we're talking in. I mean, I'm not sure this is an example of, but recently I heard a lecture from a professor at Washington University. And the point that he was making is that if the teacher gives the student the right to use AI, and when the student hands in the paper, you have no idea who really wrote it. You have no idea whether the student wrote it or it was written by AI. And if it was written by AI, how much help was given by AI and how much help was given by the student? So that's a factor.
Absolutely. As somebody who's going back into the classroom next week to teach again for the spring semester, it is certainly something that I worry about. I have sensed sometimes that students are using it, and it's a problem because they're not learning.
Well, can you relate to the point that I was making?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think it's a huge problem because I did a show recently on AI or the ethics of AI with Mark McLennan. And, you know, he was talking about the positives of using AI and how it's really helpful. But there has to be ethical considerations. There's a real downside. And I do think one of the downsides is it is creating disinformation or misinformation and making it seem real. So that's eroding the trust. That's really, it's taking advantage of people. It's lying to them, and it's making people make bad decisions. That's my personal opinion.
Yeah, I think that truth is the issue.
Absolutely. The truth is the issue. And which brings me to another point, because you brought up, you know, there's no such thing as privacy, or we have to trust in disinformation and where people get their information. Part of it is, I think, the fragmentation of where we get our information from. more and more so. This is the advent of cable TV and now social media. You can get your news from a channel that supports your belief already, as versus reading or flipping through an entire newspaper and perhaps seeing something you had not thought of before, or making you understand both, see both points of the view. If you're getting your information from social media or you're following it, you're choosing who to follow. So you're getting people, number one, who amplify a point of view you already believe, which makes it seem even more real and vibrant. And it is leaving you open to more, being more gullible to disinformation or misinformation, because there is no privacy. We know what you believe in, so we're going to feed you bad information that'll support what you believe in and get you more hyped up.
I think that people like reinforcement. I think reading what we believe to be true, whether it's true or not, is a pat on the back that we feel. It not only reinforces, but it spreads around the world. So that's my feeling about this point of view of people reading what they already know and whether they and believing it is, as I said, it's a pat on the back.
So we're in PR. Is there a role for PR or communications people to help alleviate this problem or help certainly to try and build trust? What can we do?
I think it opens up a big role for PR to publish client messages on the internet that are accurate, and which leads to another point, which is monitoring. It really opens up a monitoring role for PR to catch when it occurs. And so that, to me, is the monitoring role is not something that was done, and I still don't think it's done consistently on client situations. But I think it's necessary in today's world. You kind of get the point I'm making?
Yeah, and I was going to ask you to expand on it. So monitoring not only about the client, but the issue and the world and the business that they're in. So really broad-based?
Broad-based, yes, broad-based. It's really everything that would potentially move the truth further away. So I think it's important that you look at this thing, the monitoring function, broadly.
When you work with clients, is that one of the first things we need to say to them? We need to understand and we need to continually be monitoring instead of just pushing out your messages. We need to understand the context that it's in so that people perceive it to be truthful and will trust them in you?
I think it has become first and foremost, once you understand what your target audience is thinking based on your research, and once you've come up with the messages that have to be communicated, we have to then monitor to see how we are being presented by third parties, if at all, and if we're not, we want it to be accurate. So I think it's an important point today. And yet, I don't think that most clients, most PR people do it. I have no proof. But I think it's something that's a fundamental action.
I would agree. I don't think most people do it. And the only thing they monitor for is, hey, did our press release get picked up? Hey, did our copy point get, you know, share a voice kind of thing?
But it's as you just said. If their press release is picked up, but within seconds away, there's another take on it, then the issue of that I mentioned before of explosion of content, and you don't know what to believe.
I agree with you. So it is a much broader sense of monitoring that we need to do and prioritize. And I agree. I don't think most people do that. Because very often, as you know, monitoring at a lot of agencies, and certainly even in companies, departments, that's a responsibility that gets pushed down to the junior people.
Yeah, and you know, that's an interesting point you're making, that it gets pushed down to the junior people, because I think this is not to in any way denigrate the junior people, but monitoring needs astute management, and you need to study the implication of what certain things are saying and how that affects what we've put out as key messages.
You can only hear with the ears and the experience you have, as I say, and the gray hair that you have. So, no, it probably should be one of the most senior things, because you can understand it with that more experience, so you can digest it and play the what-if game when you read something based on the years of experience you have.
You know, one of the points that I wanted to make is what does trust mean? And
sure.
Trust means, to me, transparency, doing good, integrity. As I said before, and want to emphasize, is that trust is the currency of relationships and reputation. And what trust means is transparency, doing good, and, of course, integrity. One of the points that I wanted to make is that I think there is a new order of advocacy out there. I think consumers say they want to buy products from companies that share their values and beliefs. And it was used to be that companies were fearful of stepping on toes, declaring a preference for one eleemosynary activity over another. But today, for example, a sporting goods company can gain traction by sponsoring the Special Olympics and promoting the hell out of it. And then they have to make sure they have a campaign to tell the story to the consumer as to why they're doing it. But I think that consumers want that today, and that PR should set up metrics to monitor social action to make sure that we are meeting the target. Does that make sense to you?
It does. And one of the things I would say, and I know when I spoke to Patrice Tanaka a few weeks ago about being purpose-driven, I think that makes sense, but that has to be authentic to the brand. They just can't pick something and throw it out there to reach a target audience. It has to be authentic to the brand for what they're doing. And that goes back to transparency and trust.
Right. Well, that's the point I was making. A sporting goods company would logically be able to sponsor Special Olympics because it relates to their product, and yet it's doing good.
Right.
So I think that the company has to choose charities that represent their values and need their help.
That totally makes sense to me. One more thing about trust, Ken, and we know that trust in the media is eroding. What can the media do from your perspective to rebuild trust in itself? Because I think if we don't trust the media, this is my personal opinion, if we don't trust the media as a society, as a people, everything's going to fall apart.
Yeah, I think it's a good question, and it's a hard one, too. I basically think that the media has got to be very, very sensitive and may need to have a committee to be kind of a watchdog as to what they release into the, particularly on the internet. And if what they release could lead to problems, there's certainly not going to be trust. So I think they have to be sensitive to what they release, that it represents trust, that it represents doing good, and that it does not represent evil.
Right. And so that sounds to me like that's going to be a process, because they have to start doing that, and then people have to start seeing that and trusting them. That sounds like building trust is a long-term process. That does sound like a long-term process to me.
You know, going back to the sporting goods and the Special Olympics concept that I gave you,
mm-hmm.
I think it's important. The way I like to think of it is not just with the media, but with the client. You need to walk the talk. If you are going to do a sponsorship, the Special Olympics, and you're a sporting goods company, then you have to make sure that everything you do is consistent with that.
Oh, absolutely. And that includes their hiring practices and everything they do. They just can't slap a logo on something or say we sponsored something and expect that trust and goodwill to come.
Well, I think the point you're making is a really good one, that they really have to examine, are they hiring people who have special needs? Are they doing research on people who have special needs, and what what kind of application can that research take? So, yeah, I think the point you're making is on target.
Yeah, I mean, are their products adaptive to people who might use them? You know, it's a bigger, there's an authenticity that comes. If you are authentic and you're living that, then people will trust you more. If not, I think we're a skeptical society that looks like, oh, they just bought that.
Well, I think you hit on a key word here, authenticity, because if you're not authentic today, you're going to be in trouble. And I think the very fact that we're talking about this should stimulate our professionals in public relations to knock on the door of the client and make sure that the client is aware of all of these things that have to be done today that didn't used to be have to be done.
Absolutely. Do you find clients receptive to listening to this?
Yes.
Oh, good.
Well, I think, you know, here's the thing is that I think clients are receptive to charitable links today, whereas years ago, as I mentioned before, they were worried about stepping on toes. Today, they're worried about the value. They know that the consumer shares the values that the company has, and the company realizes that. And so, therefore, they want to promote those values.
That makes sense to me. Since we only have another minute or two, what's one more thing that we should consider? Is there hope? Can we rebuild trust? Can we get these numbers up, do you think?
I really think, well, I'm an optimist.
Okay.
And I think that by the very fact that we are studying this, that we are conscious of this, and gives us, and there's validity to what we're talking about, it can only benefit the client. So yes, I think the client is already more receptive. What I don't have is with me at this moment, but we might do a study on using charities as an example on the number of clients that are linking with charities today compared with 10 years ago. And I bet that in view of the fact that they know that clients, that these values are important to clients, that there'll be a great increase.
Wow. That would be interesting to have talk about that study if you do that. That sounds fascinating.
Well, we could do it together.
We could. Ken, I thank you so much for being here today. It's been a great conversation. Thank you.
It's been my pleasure, and thanks for being such a good hostess.
And that's Let's Talk PR and More for today. You can find more information about the show and about me at Goldman Communications Group's website, www.goldmanpr.net. And if you want to hear this show again, you can listen to the podcast, which is posted on Goldman Communications Group's website, as well as on your favorite podcast sites, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon, and iHeartRadio. Thank you again for listening. I look forward to talking PR and more with you all again next week.